This is the Royal Elephant Podcast, and today, as we're both eating our microphones, we're going to be talking about tasty. A better world, things that make things better, and nothing makes things better than people giving things to me. That's what we talk about, right?
No.
Oh, dang it.
No. We're talking about... We're talking about altruism and people giving to the greater good and all of that fun stuff. No. Wrong, incorrect, wrong. Yeah, this is a little bit of a windy project, but story. But like, bear with me a little bit. So, this was inspired by a bit of news I saw that Canonical. Full disclosure, I worked for Canonical for a handful of years, many moons ago. The folks behind Ubuntu and OpenStack and other fun stuff like that is donating $120,000 a year to open source projects, which I thought, oh, that's cool, that's interesting. And then sort of almost moved on, but I did a little digging a little bit deeper. And this isn't just, if you go and look at some of the other big organizations in open source, you will find a handful of blog posts out there about organizations celebrating that they're giving to open source, which is all wonderful and altruistic. Then go and check on the dates of some of those blog posts. And what you will probably see is that a lot of that messaging was quite some time ago. This is in typical Roaring Elephant fashion, this is by no means an exhaustive study. Looking up organizations like IBM or Red Hat, you could say they're the same thing nowadays, but let's keep them separate. IBM celebrated back in, I think it was 2001, the fact that they were donating, I think it was, 2012, tell a lie, that they were donating $100,000 to the future of open source. And that was the point where they were a $1 billion company. And their donations went to Creative Commons, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, Software Freedom Law Center, and UNICEF Innovation Labs. Now, don't get me wrong. These are great, great sort of organizations. Well worth the donations, I'm sure. But that's not what this is about. This is about... Canonical is donating to the actual open source projects themselves that so much of what they do relies on. They're not donating to large organizations, large foundations, and things like that. They're actually donating to the authors of individual projects, of things that they are using across there. Various tool chains, distributions, and other open source projects that they have. And this is cool. I like it. And I'm pausing for Jon to counter and say that everything is terrible and shouldn't be done.
Well, it is terrible because I was expecting people to give me stuff, but apparently that's going to happen. In that case, this is kind of second tier. Great, let's call it that.
I mean, all you need to do, Jon, is develop an open source project or library that everyone wants to use, and then, hey, maybe you'll get the cash fairy rain money down on top of you.
So I write my little... should I publish my little program about how to not pay taxes? Everybody will want it. It's illegal, but that's just... Anyway.
Yeah, maybe not.
The thing is, it's funny you say that it's all 10 years and... ago, and maybe even longer than that, because I do remember that in the last year, maybe 2 years, we have been talking quite a bit about developers of very cornerstone projects having to stop developing or maintaining their projects because no funding available. So, as you said, UNICEF and Electronic Frontier and stuff like that, definitely decent causes, but don't really help that problem out. This sounds like a step much closer towards that endeavor to get, as you say, the people working at the projects some money so that the projects can kept being maintained and don't go away.
Yeah, yeah. And when I looked at sort of other organizations and what they were giving, you know, back in 2001, IBM made a big splash about giving $40 million of their own software and solutions to open source projects to use to make them better. And again, that's not really what a lot of these smaller open source projects are looking for. Like, they're, to your point just now, like, they're, a lot of them are looking for, you know, not that they want to necessarily make this their job, or replace it. I'm sure some would, but I'm not all of them. But if sort of organizations that are built, you know, and we're talking commercial organizations here, that are built on top of the back of open source libraries, projects, as you say, cornerstone foundation things that exist, you know, if all of them just gave a tiny proportion of, you know, what it is that they make back to some of these projects, the world surely would be a much better place, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but it's like with the Amazon forest, right? They're cutting all the trees down to make the woods and whatever they need right now. They're not looking to the future. And the problem here is that these big companies making billions of dollars using open source projects, not giving anything back, they are cutting the legs from under their own chairs, because at some point these things will disappear and they will have problems. And then it's going to cost them a lot more to try and backfill everything that drops out. And that's the least of the worries. Again, we've talked about this in the past before, that a lot of small SSL, for example, just the encryption mechanism, just imagine that goes away. Yeah. Does my bank card still work? Probably not.
NTP was another one that came up.
Whole milk goes away.
There's been, and this is really cool. But what this also led to is, again, digging a little bit deeper, the platform that Canonical used to figure out, because this to me is the really cool thing. Mm-hmm. Canonical didn't just stick a finger in the air and go, oh, well, we'll give, you know, $100 to Joe Bloggs or whatever. They definitely didn't give $100 to Jan. But what they did is they used a platform called thanks.dev, which I think I've come across before at some point, but I must have glossed over it. I must have not kind of really appreciated it in any depth, because in looking at it in more depth, it is a very, very cool little project. And what it does is it will take a look at your GitHub repository, and it will tell you, based on your code, if you were to sort of donate some money, here is the proportions that you should donate it based on how much you're using it. And this is really cool. I love this kind of stuff, because it's putting data behind something that can otherwise be a little bit wishy-washy of like, oh, I don't know which libraries we're using, or, you know, who's using what across our organization. Nice little notification from my phone there. The website is, as you might expect, thanks.dev. And there's a really sort of fun graph on it, which might be a little confusing, but we'll try and explain it.
Confused me.
Really good podcasting. which is, and it just has a statement, what if big tech donated $1 million a year? And it's kind of interesting, because from left to right, it goes from the projects or libraries that are most used within your code base to, on the right, the ones that are used the least. And there's some interesting sort of interesting patterns in this. So what you can do is you can see from the various sort of projects that have been analyzed, or various big tech companies that have been analyzed, what are the major open source projects or components that they fundamentally rely on. And there's a few sort of highlights here. So one, Fiserv, for example, something like, at a guess, I would say maybe, I don't know. Actually, it is a handful of different projects. Maybe, maybe their sort of their code is built off of maybe 9 or 10 different projects that between them, should potentially, if they were going to donate $1 million, get $100,000 each. That's wild. That's crazy. And it's kind of awesome. There's another one, actually, which is even more impressive. So Uber-Go, the repo, apparently something like 75% of that project relies on Stretcher. So, if they were going to donate by the percentage they use something, they should give maybe, $753,000 to the folks behind Stretcher. And not all of these organizations could certainly afford $1 million. I get that. But there's a few organizations here that definitely could. Just a quick shout as I scroll up from the bottom. Let's see, what do we have
Walmart
here?
Walmart in there.
Yes. Walmart, Twitch TV, Uber, TomTom, Telstra. I mean, there's Snowflake. There's a lot of Shopify, ServiceNow.
Of course, Microsoft.
There's a lot of
in there as well.
Yeah. And the list goes up. Basically, all of the big tech companies are in here, and I think it's really cool the work that that this person has done, and it's all done by one person, I think. So Ali Nazat out there in Sydney, if you're listening, love to get you on the podcast to talk more about this. But I think we see problems, we see this called out all the time. We've spoken about this a number of different times with key projects, key foundation open source projects, like relying on single individuals. We've also talked before about how will new open source developers get into these things? Like, will they want to come and join an existing project? Probably not. Like, they'll want to go and start off their own thing. And, if these organizations, could or would think about donating at anything like these kind of scales, I honestly think it would fundamentally change the face of open source for the better. I think this would be an amazing thing to embrace.
I think you're right. It would definitely change the face for the better. Well, you always have to. I've got my skepticism about human nature in general, because at the moment, somebody committing to open source and you're not being employed by a company that's doing the support or enterprise features, stuff like that, you're doing it purely as a hobby, as a voluntary thing. You kind of step in there with very low expectations from both sides, to be honest, because if you're volunteering on my thing, I will be thankful for everything you give me, and I will not tell you, you did a bad job, do it again. You'll try to work with it. And for me, from my end, I'll just do what I can, and if I can't, I stop, and things like that. Once you start making money on something, I mean, look at our little podcast. When we started this, we did this for free, and it was a labor of love. Now they're making millions of Give me a funky money that doesn't cost anything. I mean, you know,
yeah, rubles.
Let's not go to no Russia now. Once again, in Africa, a country that made little trillion Trinidad, I don't know, whatever, doesn't matter. There's a different way of looking at it. Once you start seeing it as a job, as a second job, it will hurt your enjoyment of it typically, because you will start wanting something in return. So it will change, definitely, for the good. Well, there's no good without bad. This one coin, two sides, is always going to go together. So it would be interesting to see what happens as a thought experiment if I could run back time afterwards if it decided it didn't work out. Because I do think there's a danger that this actually becomes more big business at that point. Now, that being said, I do think at least some companies should definitely do this. Maybe not everybody, but I mean, just by coincidence, if you look at Facebook on this list, the project they're using the most is actually called Sebastian Bergman. And it's not just Facebook.
I wonder who wrote that.
Yeah, if you go to Microsoft, the second, third project they use, Sebastian Bergman. And apparently, if you click through it, it's kind of fun in the website. You can just click through and see what it actually is.
Yeah,
it's the creator of PHP Unit. So it's a lot of, that's actually something I meant. I didn't do an exhaustive search here, but just scrolling through the graph,
yeah,
a lot of the projects are being used in unit testing and OTA environments. So not really the software itself, but more of the build tree. Jekyll was in there as much as well, for example. All of that stuff is... And that's true in my experience, my own experience, that is often very much based on open source. Having that disappear might not affect your product directly, but it will delay your next release by some time, probably.
Yeah.
So
that's very cool.
I mean, it's cool that it exists, and I didn't know it existed. You brought this up and I had never seen or heard of it. So the fact that actually somebody built this, and as you say, it's a one-man job, one person job, let's be diverse. And already, apparently, because the only way that this stuff is on this website is by these organizations opening up their manifest files, at least, to show what the dependencies are. So they have found the site, and at the moment it's like 200 something companies on there. I have no idea how many projects are on there, because that's not easy to see here. But apparently, I mean, the only way that this site can know what Microsoft is using is because Microsoft opened up the manifest files. They have stuff online, of course, publicly. Maybe that's how it found it. But the fact that it's happening does mean that people are thinking about it. And I think that's, for me, the main good message, that there is now discussion about this, and more than just discussion, but actually...
Yeah.
Actions happening around it to make this work. Because when I was skeptical about yours, it would be a good thing for the world if this would happen. I'm not skeptical at all about if something like this doesn't happen. Because if something like this doesn't happen, whether it be thanks.dev or some other initiative, I mean, some way of getting money into the pockets of these developers, we will be heading into dark times. That's a certainty, I think.
The other thing that's interesting on here is you can see like the top donors as well. And you know, one of the things that kind of we debated a little bit between us before we even went on recording is, you know, this whole kind of episode was inspired by Canonical publicizing the fact that over the next year they're going to donate $120,000. So far they've only donated about 10% of that, because they've just started the program. Like the largest donor that's recorded is currently the folks at Sentry. So they've donated so far $154,000, which on the one hand sounds like a lot of money, and on the other hand actually feels like a relatively tiny kind of bucket of cash, and they're the largest company. And you know, I think props to Sentry. I think it's amazing that they're they're kind of getting behind this and supporting the grassroots developers behind the projects that they, you know, their product and their sort of enterprise platform and their cloud platform and all those kind of things are built on. This is cool. I think it's absolutely fair game that, you know, Canonical, for example, are celebrating the fact that they're getting this, and hopefully they get a bunch of PR and lots of people go, oh, great, Canonical doing some good stuff. I know they don't always have the best reputation of collaborating with others. You know, that's another story for another day, possibly over a drink or two. But I think the pros outweigh the cons in this, and I completely agree with you. Like, not everyone wants this to turn into a job. Some people do, though. Some people would happily give up their quote-unquote day job to work on their passion project. Like, I know people like that who are sort of one-man bands behind open source projects. They would love nothing more than for that to become, you know, that their career. I know.
Yes.
Probably I can think of two people that have managed to do it successfully, but you know, the number of people that actually make that transition, that switch, very, very small. And again, I agree. It's not everybody, it's not for everybody, and not everybody will want to make that transition. And for some people it won't, it will take the joy out of it, very possibly. But at least then they have the choice. They have the option. Like, they can just go and donate the money that they get to another project or to charity or to, you know, whatever, do whatever else they want to do with it. But at least this would give some optionality to that.
I disagree that most or a lot of the project owners want to make it their job to do this. I think it's slightly different. I think most of them would want to get paid for what they're doing today. But what they're doing today is not the same thing that they would be doing if this would become their job. Because there's a reason we get paid for our jobs. Hopefully 30% to maybe 60% of what your job entails is something you like doing and have fun doing and would do anyway. But there's always a certain part of stuff you have to do in addition to that, that I need to get paid or else, otherwise I'm not doing this. So there's a small differentiation there. I think most people would not want to give up their freedom, their control, and work for a boss when it's their passion project, because yeah, you kind of give up stuff too when you start working for somebody.
But these people wouldn't, anyway. I think that's a different topic. I think that's a different topic for another day. But I think Thanks.dev is an awesome program. I would love to see more commercial organizations, more big tech companies embracing and engaging in it. And I think it's kind of awesome.
Well, on the one hand, I think it's good that the projects are self-sustaining themselves. That's not English, what it is now. I mean, on the one hand, I would say I'm missing the Microsoft, Googles, Amazons in the top donor list. Mm. On the other hand, you don't want open source to become dependent too much on those handouts. So it would be actually better if they can actually build an ecosystem between themselves that is sustainable with an occasional injection of money from one of the big 3, 5, 4.
Yeah. I mean, it's early days. Just looking at Ali's LinkedIn, you know, he's been doing this for just over 3 years, you know, from starting from scratch, my guess would be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is his kind of solo sort of passion project. You know, I think if more organizations, I think that donations list should change drastically, you know, and hopefully more organizations will see the publicity around that Canonical has made. And, you know, when I looked at it, you could see the folks at Century congratulating the folks at Canonical for coming and joining them in kind of supporting open source developers and open source projects. And I think, you know, if more of that happens, that can only be a good thing. And or at least I believe that the good would outweigh any negatives or any bad.
Yep, I agree. I'm just doing one little check here. Yeah, okay, fair. Okay, yep.
Cool. All right. Well, on that altruistic and for the greater good note, that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast by becoming a Patreon. Every contribution really helps. You can also go to the roaringelephant.org website for a link to our Patreon page and for more information about the podcast. And please send any feedback to podcast@roaringelephant.org. Until next time, my name is Thanks.Dave.
And my name is Thanks.John.
And we look forward to talking to you next week.
Goodbye.
See you then.